So the parsha opens up, Emra Kohanim Bnei Aaron, tell the Kohanim the Torah of Aaron, and it's the prohibition of Kohanim coming in contact with corpses. They're not allowed to take upon themselves tumas meis, the impurity of coming in contact with the dead. And the parsha opens up with Moshe Rabbeinu being told, tell it to Aaron, tell it, Emor, tell it over to Aaron. And for some reason, the Midrashim in this week's parsha starts saying tremendous drushes on the word Emor, the concept of speech. Like many of the famous Midrashim of how bad Lashon Hara is, and how bad Nivul Peh is, you know, impure speech or slander. A lot of those Midrashim are in this week's parsha, and it's all coming off the word Emor, tell Aaron the prohibition of coming in contact with a corpse. So on the word tell, they start darshaning on the whole concept of speech. Which is strange, because many parshas open up, you know, with Daber El Bnei Yisrael, you know, many parshas open up, tell them, Moshe Rabbeinu is always told throughout the Bible to tell people the halacha. But Dafka here in Parshas Emor, Dafka here in connection with the prohibition coming in contact with the dead, the Midrash decided to darshan on the concept of telling in general. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was told to tell Aaron to stay away from corpses, him and his children, stay away from corpses. So over here the Midrash decides to talk about the concept of telling and speaking. Something which needs to be understood. Why, when talking about the prohibition of coming in contact with corpses, is it the time to talk about speech in general? So the Midrash opens up this week's parasha. It brings the pasuk Imaros Hashem, Amaros Taharos. The words of Hashem, the speech of Hashem, is pure speech. So the Midrash makes an inference, says Imaros Hashem Taharos. Right, the speech of Hashem is pure. We infer from that that Imaros Basvedam Einam Taharos, that the speech of man is impure. Only God's speech is pure. And the Midrash gives a mashal to illustrate. It says a king came into a town, and the townspeople come out and greet him, and there's a tremendous parade in his honor, and the parade and all the praises that are sing to the king. Varevlo kilusan, the king enjoys the praise that the people sent to him. So he makes them campaign promises. Macharim bonen tzeh merchatzos, tomorrow I'm going to build you bathhouses. Right, and all types of municipal buildings, you know, bathhouses and swimming pools and stadiums, and you know, he's going to really put this town on the map. Right? The king went to sleep and never woke up again. Heichan hu heichan min rosav. Where is he? Where is all those words that he said? Right? And it says, but Hashem is not that way. Hashem Elokim Emes. Hashem is the God of truth. And then the Medrash adds, V'lama hu emes. Why is God the God of truth? Ki hu Elokim Chayim u'Melacham. For he's the God of life and King of the world. The whole Medrash doesn't make sense. The Medrash saying is that God's words are pure, man's words are impure. And how do you illustrate that man's words are impure? Right? From this king that made all these tremendous promises to build up the city, and he died in his sleep, and nothing came of those promises. That shows that those words are impure. Why are those words impure? The king spoke the truth to the best of his knowledge. He really wanted to do it, and he has the ultimate excuse why he didn't do it. He died. That's the best excuse ever. He couldn't do it because he was dead. Right? That's oinus if I ever heard it. So why the king's words are considered impure? Because he was barred from fulfilling them by circumstances beyond his control. But then what the Medrash goes on to say is even stranger. It says, but God is not the way. And Hashem Elokim Emes, Hashem is the God of truth. And what the Medrash means to say is that whatever God says actually happens. Right? But then the Medrash adds, but Lama hu Emes, why is he true? Ki Elokim Chayim Melechem, he's the God of life and King of the world. Like, why is God the truth? Because he's the living God. What's the connection? You know, he's the truth because he doesn't lie. You know, he wasn't because he's the living God. Elokim Chayim u'Melachon. You know, God of life, the King of the world. But what does that have to do with truth? It's truth because he's truthful. Right. So the Midrash is setting up some type of equation between life, since he's the God of life. Then you know, not just that God himself is alive, but what it means is he's the source of life. Life and truth go together. Right? Life and truth. That's a relationship that we have to explore in truth. We find this relationship back when Adam comes to life. Right? It says, Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, God blew into Adam a breath of life. Vayadam lenefesh chayim, a man became a living creature. On the words, nefesh chaya, creature of life, a living creature, says Unklus Rucha Mamala, a speaking spirit. Right, again, there's a relationship being set up that, you know, seemingly, the Pasuk is talking about being alive, that the Neshama made man alive, right? And Unklus says, is being alive, you know, what the Pasuk says, the Neshama made him be alive, is that the Neshama gave him a spirit that can speak. So again, there's this relationship being set up between the power of speech and being alive. Now, what is this relationship? Right? So, we see from the Genesis itself, God said, let there be light, and there was light. Right, and that's, you know, throughout the whole Asar Ma'amar Shnivra and Olam, all the 10 utterances that the world was created with, right, that the world was created with speech. 10 utterances gave us the whole world, and how it runs until this day is all from the power of those 10 utterances. But you see that words give life. Words give existence. Existence, you know, life. They're one and the same. They are what is. You know, what's dead is what isn't. So we see that the power of words should be the power to bring life. So this gives us tremendous insight in what it means to tell the truth. Right? That the Torah standards of what it means to tell the truth is it's not enough that you could justify in some way what you said, as in what they call the white lie. Yeah, it's true depending on how you look at it. Truth, by the Torah standards, means absolute truth. This is the reality itself. It's not information that could be interpreted in a way that's not too disjointed from reality. Words should be reality itself. Right? So the white lie, as they called it, yeah, what I said, you know, it could be interpreted in a way that is in line with the truth. That's called a lie, mamish. So that's an unadulterated lie, because the expectation that we have from words is that they should be a reflection of reality, literally. Right? Words make life, words make reality, and vice versa. Words should reflect reality in the pure sense, you know, not, you know, be able to be interpreted one way, you know, that's in line with reality, and yet same way be interpreted in a way that's inconsistent with reality. Words must reflect reality absolutely. Because words and reality should be synonymous. That just like with words, God gave reality, vice versa, whenever speaking words, they should be realities. And that's what the Medrash says. The fact that the king could say promises that wouldn't come true, so that's called impure words. That's not pure words. 100% pure speech is 100% reality. So, indeed, a person should be very careful never to make promises if he doesn't know if he could fulfill them. Right? Indeed, the Sfarim say, Rav Chaim Lajner writes in one place, as does the Maharal in one place, you know, it's in the Sfarim, that a person should try his best to say as little as possible and train his mind to work so fast that before he says any word, really, must I say this word or not? Because the word should only be said if absolutely necessary to be said, if they're absolutely true and absolutely necessary to be uttered, only then should you say the word, because that way the word is consistent with reality. Unnecessary words are inconsistent with reality. Only words that are absolutely necessary to be spoken should be spoken. And those words are therefore pure words. Those words are real words. That's the power of speech. And with this, we can also understand, you know, other concepts that come up in this week's parsha, like the halacha of proclaiming the Yomim Tovim, Asher Tikra Osam B'Mo'adam, that Bezdin's declaration that it's now the new month, that's what makes the new month. That speech makes that reality. Right? You know, and that's, and literally the speech makes the reality, because the halacha is that even Bezdin miscalculated the orbits of the moon, right? The halacha is still that Rosh Chodesh is when they said it. Their words make reality. And that's later in the parasha. The parasha ends with the terrible sin of the Megadeth that used his words against the one above, right? And that's mamish high treason, in the sense that the power of speech that man has is godlike. That since God, his words are true because he's the source of life, i.e., what the Medrash meant to say. What the Medrash meant to say is that because God is the source of life, that's why his words give life. And if God gave us a soul of life, a divine spirit that he created, something reflective of him, and infused man with it to give man the power of speech, so man has to be godlike with his speech also, and only say the absolute truth. And we get this power of speech to communicate realities, make realities, and not just describe reality, but also make realities with our speech. Right? So to use the power of speech against God is like to use God's own tools against him. That's why it's high treason, not just an offense. Right? It's using God, what God shared of himself with man, against God himself. That's the terrible sin of the Megadeth at the end of the parasha. So now we can understand, you know, what the power of speech has to do directly with coming, you know, rather avoiding contact with a corpse. Corpse is death. Speech is life. Right? The Kohanim in particular, you know, the whole Jewish people called Mamleches Kohanim, kingdom of priests, but the Kohanim in particular that were are the representatives of the Jewish people to serve, and indeed they have a greater power of speech, as we see. They have the power to bless. And also the Pasuk says in Malachi, Ki sifse kon yishmudas torah shpul, for the lips of the Kohen speak knowledge, and Torah they will request from his mouth. Right, they have the power of Torah in their mouths, and all the halachas of what a good Rebbe should be like is learned out from that Pasuk, which was written by Kohanim. So they are meant to be the priests and the ones that give the blessing and the ones that teach the Torah. So they have since they've been singled out to be servants of God, so because of that, they have even a greater power of speech with them. Right? So they're a little bit more godlike than the rest of the Jewish people. So for that reason, they have even a greater power in their speech to bless and to teach Torah. So also, this is perfectly consistent with the prohibition of not coming in contact with the corpse. They have to stay away from death. Kohanim are supposed to be aligned with the power of life, and they have to stay away from the side of death. And that's why, by no coincidence, in context of the prohibition of avoid death, right? Do not come in contact. Don't come in contact with what isn't. So, in that context, is also revealed the power of speech and all the drushes on the power of speech, because the power of speech is the power of life. The power of speech is the koach to not just describe reality, that's what it's for, to do nothing less than to be an absolute, necessarily true description of reality, but also to make reality, right? And reality is what is. Reality is life, and that's why the Medrash Darshan's on the power of speech, when it comes up, when it's mentioned, in the context of the prohibition of coming in contact with the